Okay, now I get to introduce myself. How's that, eh? Anyway, the way that we're going to do things this morning is I'm going to start. I'm just going to give a little bit of background of Mother's Day that we know, but this is like a ritual, isn't it? And then I believe Pam is going to follow, and then Donna, and then we'll open it up for other people to, we ask for quotations, ideas, what have you. And the three of us decided that the best way to introduce ourselves would be as mothers. Well, I can't introduce myself as a mother, but I can certainly introduce myself as a grandmother. A very proud grandmother of Allison, whom I miss, because she's, as I've told many of you, she is now living in the Netherlands, working on a master's degree in international business and thinking very seriously of staying in Europe. So if I want to see her, I'll have to go across the ocean. So anyway, I thought I'd just say a few things. And when I Googled, if you Google Mother's Day, you can sit there forever, all the things. And I found something here, and I thought it kind of interesting of all the choices here. And this was an article that appeared in the Vancouver Sun a couple of years ago. And it says, and I'm just going to, just a few extracts of it, it's the story behind Mother's Day and why it's so important. For most of the last century, we have marked the occasion of Mother's Day with bouquets, chocolates, gifts, and brunch. The founder of Mother's Day was appalled. In fact, shortly after her decade-long campaign to have Mother's Day proclaimed, Anna Jarvis became its most ferocious adversary because she said it had become so commercialized. That wasn't the point. I'm skipping parts here. Jarvis wanted to dedicate a holy day to honor mothers and chose the second Sunday in May, which was the anniversary of the death of her own mother, and this is in the United States. In 1908, she arranged a simple service at her mother's church at which 500 white carnations were distributed to members of the congregation and another larger gathering in an auditorium at which she spoke. After years of writing letters to leaders in business, religion, and politics, she finally succeeded in having U.S. President Woodrow Wilson, who happened to be a lifelong friend, call for observation of Mother's Day in 1914. Canada made it official the following year, so 1915. By this time, Jarvis had incorporated the Mother's Day International Association and trademarked the white carnation, as well as the phrases Second Sunday in May and Mother's Day. And this is something I just learned, probably a lot of you know this, that Mother's Day is spelt apostrophe S because it's to honor one mother, my mother, that kind of idea. I didn't know that. Did you? No. Okay, well, there we go, you see. So, Jarvis felt the single white carnation and a letter expressing love and appreciation were the appropriate ways to pay homage to mothers. Instead, people delivered floral arrangement, bought gifts of jewelry and clothing, presented boxed chocolates, and sent greeting cards with pro forma sentiments. Jarvis denounced the commercialization of Mother's Day, threatened to sue the governor of New York, who had planned a big public celebration in 1923, and she was carried away by police in 1932 when she tried to break up a rally by the American War Mothers who were selling carnations. She sent telegrams to President Franklin Roosevelt, who had approved a 1934 stamp bearing the image of Whistler's mother and a vase of white carnations in honor of the mothers of America. She went door to door asking people to sign a petition to rescind Mother's Day, because that wasn't the Mother's Day she had in mind. Well, you can see she didn't succeed, eh? Jarvis never married or had children and died alone and penniless in a Pennsylvania mental institution in 1948. So, kind of interesting. And then there's a whole part about, you know, all the spending and so forth. But then that's in the United States, well, probably in Canada as well. But anyway, the woman Jarvis wanted to honor, her mother, Anne Marie Reeves Jarvis, illustrates why. So just a second, I'll just get this. She had 11 children, only 4 of whom lived to adulthood. Because of the high infant mortality rate, she decided to do something about it, so that was the mother. She traveled from town to town, setting up mother's friendship clubs to teach others about boiling milk, bathing, and cleaning diapers. During the Civil War, when her town was beset by an influx of Union and Confederate soldiers suffering from typhoid, she helped soldiers on either side and played a key role in reconciling North and South after the war. And then E.M. Forster, so this was her mother, okay, that she wanted to honor. And E.M. Forster wrote, "I am sure that if the mothers of various nations could meet, there would be no more wars." I thought that was kind of just a little few interesting things about the carnation and so forth. And now I think, I had one quotation. I had to share one. Might share others. We'll see. Just a minute. Okay, this was the 11 best Mother's Day quotes. This is the one that I've chosen. "There is no way to be a perfect mother, and a million ways to be a good one." I thought that was neat. Okay, so I'm passing it on to Pam now.
Right, so I'm happy to be a mother of two people, and I'm going to add a little bit at the beginning because of that not being a perfect mother, because my daughter, and I think it was in grade 2, they all had to make something for their mothers. This teacher is pretty creative, so she didn't put something on the board for them all to copy. So Wendy came home with a certificate for me, Mother's Day certificate, and it was a second class mother certificate. And actually, I felt pretty proud of her because she said, she explained, well, it's almost impossible to get a first class certificate. So she thought I'd done pretty well, and I really felt pleased because I always wanted her to be absolutely honest, and she'd thought that one through. So at any rate, she's one of my kids, and she lives in Calgary with her husband and 2 boys, 7 and 11 in age. And then my son lives in Winnipeg with his wife and 3 little girls there, 2, 4, and 5. So they're nicely distributed from 2 to 11 for us, at any rate, and mixture of boys and girls again for us, but with them it's 3 and a 2. But at any rate, maybe this is partly having been an English teacher so long that I pulled out some poems by some fairly well-known authors to do with mothers. The first one's Christina Rossetti, 19th century poet, and she wrote a lot of sonnets, and these were collected into volumes. And one of these volumes she wanted to dedicate to her mother when her mother was over 80 years old. And so, being a poet, she wrote a sonnet, not just to my mother, but a sonnet to her mother, dedicating the whole album, the whole volume to her mother. And this is it. "Sonnets are full of love, and this my tome has many sonnets. So now here shall be one sonnet more, a love sonnet, from me to her whose heart is my heart's quiet home, to my first love, my mother, on whose knee I learnt love lore that is not troublesome, whose service is my special dignity, and she my lodestar, while I go and come. And so, because you love me, and because I love you, mother, I have woven a wreath of rhymes wherewith to crown your honored name. In you, not 40 years can dim the flame of love, whose blessed glow transcends the laws of time and change and mortal life and death." And the second one is quite a bit different. It's Langston Hughes, a 20th century American writer. And this poem is from the point of view of a mother who's not had an easy life, giving advice to her son. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time I's been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps, 'cause you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. And now three lines from Carl Sandburg, and I think some of you either now or in the past will relate to the situation here. Here is a thing my heart wishes the world had more of. I heard it in the air of one night when I listened to a mother singing softly to a child, restless and angry in the darkness. Then the last one is Walt Whitman, who loved repetition. So there's lots of repetition with variation. And he's trying to emphasize that however great a man may be, every man came out of a woman and is influenced by women. Unfolded out of the folds of the woman, man comes unfolded, as is always to come unfolded. Unfolded out of the friendliest woman is to come the friendliest man. Unfolded out of the inimitable poem of the woman can come the poems of man. Only thence have my poems come. Unfolded by brawny embraces from the well-muscled woman I love, only thence come the brawny embraces of the man. Unfolded out of the justice of the woman, all justice is unfolded. Unfolded out of the sympathy of the woman is all sympathy. A man is a great thing upon the earth, and for eternity, but every jot of the greatness of man is unfolded out of woman. First, the man is shaped in the woman. He can then be shaped in himself. So now it's over to Donna.
In the right place or you won't hear me. Does this bend? Yeah, I guess. Actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was persuaded to speak briefly on Mother's Day. And if any of you happen to remember, at that time I said I had, from the time I was a late teenager right up through the age that I was at that time, I had a lot of mixed feelings about Mother's Day. And actually, they were expressed in terms of how the person who started it then, you know, really felt bad about Mother's Day, because that was what I disliked, was the commercializing of it and spending a lot of money and all of the ads. But underneath, you know, I quite like the idea of a Mother's Day. So that feeling is still with me, and you'll see from my selections the mixed feelings that I have. But before I begin, I just want to say I was doing spring house cleaning, and I went through this big chest. Those of you who have been to our house, we have a big chest, and a lot of mementos and so forth are in that. It's in our family room, and we use it as a coffee table. And going through that, I found this wonderful card that I have saved. Our youngest in grade 2 had made this lovely, lovely big card for me, and she said on it, "To my best mother," M-A-T-H-E-R, in grade 2. I've always treasured that card. So anyway, I want to start, I just have a couple of very short poems and a couple of comments. One of them that I found that I quite liked is humorous, and it says, for the mom who does everything. Mom, I know you do the dishes, and I know you cook the food. I know you scrub all the floors, even when you're in a bad mood. And every night you walk the dog while I'm watching all my shows. On Thursdays, you take out the trash, and every spring you wash the windows. Mom, I know you're sad I'll go someday and leave you all alone. But right now I'm only 35, so what other place could I call home? Now another one that I found that I quite enjoyed is called Things My Mother Taught Me, you know, which is a very important role that mothers and fathers play. My mother, I'm not going to read them all because it gets repetitious, but my mother taught me logic. If you fall off that swing and break your neck, you can't go to the store with me. My mother taught me to think ahead. If you don't pass your spelling test, you'll never get a job. My mother taught me ESP. Put your sweater on. Don't you think I know when you're cold? My mother taught me humor. When that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me. And my mother taught me how to become an adult. If you don't eat your vegetables, you'll never grow up. And my all-time favorite was justice. One day, you'll have kids, and I hope they turn out just like you. Then you'll see what it's like. All right, so these humorous little pieces capture the serious role that mothers play in the lives of their children. They guide, cajole, threaten, teach, and love their offspring from birth through adulthood. And, you know, my kids are in their 50s, and I still worry and love and cajole and advise whether they want it or not. And frequently, their efforts are little appreciated until their child does reach adulthood. How can a role filled with so much stress, hard work, anxiety be rewarding? Well, it's one of the mysteries of life, but it is fun and amazingly satisfying. So with that, I'm sure that we're going to invite people to share their stories and poems and so forth.
So how are we going to do this? Are you going to go around then?
Okay. I'll take this one. Oops.
Okay, super. So just put up your hand and we'll have some sharing then.
Okay, now who came first? I was looking the wrong way. Okay, we'll start with age before beauty. Age and beauty.
This is a poem, and I really didn't appreciate my mother until I had mine own. To my children, when I spill some food on my clean dress, or maybe forget to tie my shoe, please be patient and perhaps remember that the time I spent with you, when I taught you how to eat with care, plus tying shoelaces and combing your hair, dressing yourself and combing your hair, they were the precious times I spent with you. So when I forget, what I was about to say, just give me a minute, or maybe two. It probably wasn't important anyway, because I'd much rather listen to you. If I tell a story one more time, and you know it, the ending through and through, please remember your first nursery rhyme when I rehearsed it 100 times with you. When my legs are tired and it's hard to stand, or walk the steady pace I would like to do, please take me carefully by my hand and guide me as I did with you.
Thank you. It's not a poem, but it is a story. I just talked to my mom this morning, as I do every Sunday, and she reminded me about the fact that my half-brother was born on the 28th of May 1944 in Berlin, Germany, under the bombs of the American pilots. And I'm always thinking, and my half-brother is dead now, he died a few years ago. But it is in honor of all the mothers in the world, and even though Mother's Day in France in 2 weeks from now, but it's just the fact that it is tough to be a mom. And wherever you are, whatever you do, you still have to have babies at some place. And it reminds me also of the women who, during the Vietnam War, under the bombs of napalm from the U.S. Army, again, had to give birth. And it is sad, and it's an honor to be a woman and to be a mom. So to all the moms, thank you.
Beauty before youth.
Oh, now I feel old. I lost my mom when I was 5, and I was the youngest of 4 children. And so, actually, this is also a tribute to my father, who became somewhat a mother. All of a sudden, he was up 6 o'clock every morning, making breakfast for us all. And he even tried to sew. We used to laugh at him. He used to make dreadful porridge. He would stir in raspberry jam to try and make it more palatable, but then it would turn this awful purple brown. And we would all complain. But anyway, he was actually quite amazing. So this is sort of a tribute to other mothers in my life. Because it didn't matter about the gender, actually. People who worried about me because I was quite small, and in those days they didn't have rules about you had to be 11 to be home alone and all that stuff, you know. I used to walk back home from school at age 6 by myself, or it might be with friends, but there was a mother of a friend who used to invite me to lunch with her daughter, because she knew I didn't have a mother, and my sister used to try and make lunches for us, but they always didn't come off that well because she was only 13, so, you know, things were a little bit ragged at times. But another mother who I saw just recently used to have me invited to her farm with one of my very best friends, Roz, who I also spent time with just recently, a month ago. And then she took me to see her mum, who's now 92. She already had 6 children of her own, and she would say, bring Ingrid home for the weekend. And she'd just pull up another chair, and then Roz and I would play in the haystacks and go feed the lambs and so forth. And, you know, so I just, and it was just wonderful to see Jessie, this 92-year-old. So, and then now in this life here in Canada, many friends have been caring, and I think all of us have the ability to be caring and look out for each other. And so that's what I think is so important. And, you know, I have some close friends who are male who look after me, you know, in the sense of we look after each other. You know, at special times when neither of us have family around, we invite each other over at those special times. So, that's it.
So Mother's Day occupies a special place in my heart, not only because of my mother, whom I adore, and I feel is the incarnation of unconditional love, but I was also born on Mother's Day, and every Mother's Day, my mother doesn't fail to remind me that she missed her supper because of me.
Ingrid said, but what a gift.
Last night, 5 of us went to the dinner put on by the grandmothers for grandmothers, and of course that raises the whole issue of grandmothers as mothers. And we had a wonderful presentation by Paola Gianturco, I think her name is. And I have a copy of the book that she's a photojournalist, of the book she's put together called Grandmother Power, a Global Phenomenon. And I just had a chance to kind of browse it very, very briefly, but it will be downstairs and available. But she talked about the amazing groups of grandmothers doing amazing things around the world, the group of Indian women who are sort of acting as engineers for bringing solar energy to people who didn't have any kind of power. Obviously, the grandmothers who are looking after so many children in Africa. All kinds of different projects that people are doing in 5 continents, and it's a wonderful book. But I'm just going to also make a personal connection that one of the things, as a child, my mother was widowed just before I was born, and so she moved back to live with my grandparents, and I was raised by the whole extended family. My grandmother was really critical, but so were several aunts and other people. And I often think that I was actually the luckiest of my cousins in some ways. I mean, I always used to think as a child how unfortunate I was because I didn't have a father. And but I now realize that, in fact, I had so many caring adults in my childhood that I was probably the most fortunate, and I have the richest of mothering from all these others. So anyway, I'm just making that connection, and I'd like, if anybody wants to look at this, I'll have it downstairs during the potluck. Thank you.
My mother lived on a farm in very rural Nebraska, and she lost her father when she was 5, and it was up to her and her mother and 2 older brothers to try to make a living out of that farm. And when she and my dad were, when I was young, we lived in a very small house. It was Depression times, and we slept on a porch with no heat, and but my mother made sure we had plenty to eat. I don't know how she managed the budget. I can remember going to a house across the street where they were much poorer than we were. I don't know how you could be much poorer, but they were. And they had white bread fried in lard. And I said, and I thought it was really tasty, and I said to my mother, why can't we have that? But she was a nurse and felt that we shouldn't have that kind of food. Well, she came visiting when she was 92, and I tried to get her to make me apple pie like she used to, which was really excellent pie. And she thought for a while, and she said, and I said, well, I'll get the apples, I'll peel the apples, I'll do this, that, the other thing. And she just said, I don't do that anymore. So now, was she really a good mother or not? I don't know. But then talking about second-class mothers, I think Donna is... I think she really is a first-class mother, but I have to tell you, you know, Jennifer, our middle child, is extremely honest, you know, very principled, very whatever. You don't want me to tell this. So she was sick one day she wasn't sick. She wanted to not go to work that day. And Donna said, well, just call in and say you're sick. And Jennifer said, I can't do that. So Donna said, well, just listen, I'll call in for you, and I'll show you how to do it, you know. So she taught our kids how to lie. And another kid stole, but I don't think Donna showed her how to do it. But... She has no certificate of any kind, but she's pretty good.
Well, I think we're going to have to stop now. We've just run out of time. Well, that was great, wasn't it? It's wonderful stories here.